Welcome to the Razor's Ink Podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. He's sometimes referred to as the king of folk music or the voice of a generation. He even recorded an album under the name Blind Boy Grunt, a perfect description because his voice and delivery are polarizing. There are those who love his voice and just as many who do not. But his songwriting is undeniably the stuff of genius. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, the voice of protest, analyzed through his Ballad of a Thin Man. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
I'm recording this podcast on Bob Dylan's 84th birthday. I've been a Dylan fan since the 60s. His last great album for me was Blood on the Tracks, 1975.
She looked at him and he felt a spark tingle to his bones. 'Twas then he felt alone and wished that he'd gone straight and watched out for a simple twist of fate.
It was an 8-track tape. I was a junior in high school. I spent countless hours inside YouTube, listening to his session tapes of great recordings and scouring for archival footage of concerts and interviews. One of the maxims of the Razor's Ink podcast is lyrics are the calculus of writing, which makes Bob Dylan a mathematician worthy of the Fields Medal, often referred to as the Nobel Prize of Mathematics, a great bookend to his Nobel for Literature. In many of my podcasts about music, I describe a song which has been tapping me on the shoulder and demanding my attention over the decades. One of Bob's most abstract songs is titled Ballad of a Thin Man, released by Columbia in 1965 from the album Highway 51 Revisited. I heard it for the first time on AM radio in 1965 inside my older brother's hot rod outside of Los Angeles. Even as a 7-year-old kid, I realized this song didn't fit into the top 40 AM format. After enough tapping on my shoulder, I print the lyrics, read them line by line, stanza by stanza, and attempt to understand the impact the song has had upon me. This is a very useful exercise you can use to understand the music tapping you on the shoulder. I'm going to read the lyrics to you like the prose poetry the song represents and ask you to consider the meaning of the song. I reveal my take and offer some background information you will find helpful in your analysis. There's no right or wrong answer. Just try. Let's begin.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked in you. Say, who is that man?
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked, and you say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home, because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head, and you ask, is this where it is? And somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones?
Somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones?
What's the meaning of the song, I ask? Some background to flesh out the analysis. Bob Johnson was a record producer. Artists he produced included Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Johnny Cash, The Byrds, and Simon and Garfunkel. The backing musicians were Mike Bloomfield on lead guitar, Bobby Gregg on drums, Harvey Brooks, Al Cooper on organ, and Dylan playing the piano. Notice the song is driven by Dylan's somber piano chords resembling a dirge, which contrasts with a horror movie organ, a accompaniment by Cooper. Here's a clue to the meaning of the song I Support. Cooper recalled that at the end of the session, when the musicians listened to the playback of the song, drummer Bobby Gregg said, "That is a nasty song, Bob." Cooper adds, "Dylan was the king of the nasty song at the time." Dylan is a tough interview. See his 1965 San Francisco interview, 1965 Don't Look Back tour in England, and his reflective candid interview with Ed Bradley of 60 Minutes in 2004. More to follow. In 1986, Dylan said he wrote the song in response to people who ask me questions all the time. You just get tired of that every once in a while. You just don't want to answer no more questions. I figure a person's life speaks for itself, right? So every once in a while, you got to do this kind of thing. You got to put somebody in their place. So this is my response to something that happened over in England. I think it was 63 or 64. A reporter revealed himself as Mr. Jones, who was dressed down by Dylan when Dylan shouted mockingly, "Mr. Jones, getting it all down, Mr. Jones?" A critic called the song one of Dylan's most unrelenting inquisitions, a furious, sneering dressing down of a hapless bourgeois intruder into the hipster world of freaks and weirdos, which Dylan now inhabited. Another critic argues it's a scathing take on the media, its interest in and inability to comprehend Dylan and his music, and the song was the anthem of the in-crowd. Let me translate. These arguments refer to Madison Avenue or the guys on the show Mad Men, who spent most of the episodes set in the 60s figuring out how to sell to the counterculture. My clues to the meaning of the song are found here.
Well, the sword swallower, he comes up to you and then he kneels. He crosses himself and then he clicks his high heels. And without further notice, he asks you how it feels. And he says, "Here is your throat back. Thanks for the loan." And you know something is happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
One can argue it's about advertisers cramming crummy products down your throat, or fellatio performed by Mr. Jones, who has a sexual identity crisis. My conclusion based in 2025, not 1965.
Now you see this one-eyed midget shouting the word now. And you say, "For what reason?" And he says, "How?" And you say, "What does this mean?" And he screams back, "You're a cow. Give me some milk or else go home."
If you buy the advertising pitchman analysis, "Pay Me Some Milk" is a veiled reference to installment payments on a consumer purchase or the act of a fellatio, in my opinion. The literary take is the reference.
You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known.
You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. The famous writer's sexuality has been the topic of speculation, with some suggesting he viewed himself as homosexual. He was married and fathered a child, so, and other scholars interpret Fitzgerald's characters subverting traditional masculinity, which they portray as queer representation. Some have suggested Fitzgerald's wife suspected he had an affair with Hemingway. Want more? Take an American Lit course, if they still offer them anymore. Dylan didn't drop the reference to Fitzgerald into the song by accident. Sorry, Bob, you didn't fool this cat. The brilliance of the song is that it's a chameleon song, meaning its significance can change over the decades. It would be hard to think Dylan anticipated this back in 65, but remember, it's Dylan. Within the context of our times, my take is Mr. Jones is likely a square guy, maybe even an ad exec back in the 60s, undergoing a repressed homosexual identity crisis, and finds a place he may not understand, but will come away with a new understanding. Conversely, Dylan is putting a nuisance reporter into a homoerotic scene as a literary beatdown. If so, well done. You might be asking, why didn't anybody just say the song was homoerotic? In the 60s, the subject was on the down low. Careers were at stake, including those writing about the subject, including music critics. It may have been inferred that your article describing homoerotica linked you to the practice. Get me? Taboo subjects also included kink and all its machinations. See my podcast, Sexploitation Films of the 60s, where I talk about the subject in depth. This is the reason why Tennessee Williams teased up the subject of homosexuality in his plays and adapted movies of the 50s and 60s. I tip my hat to the playwright and all the performers who courageously played many of his characters. Regardless of your opinion about the meaning of the song, I hope we can all agree to empathize with Mr. Jones, because in these crazy times,
something is happening but you don't know what it is.
Rings true for all of us. I encourage you to watch the 60 Minutes interview with Ed Bradley. It's on YouTube.
You wrote Blowing in the Wind in 10 minutes, is that right?
Probably.
Just like that?
Yeah.
You ever look at music that you've written and look back at it and say, whoa, that surprised me?
I used to. I don't do that anymore. I don't know how I got to write those songs.
What do you mean you don't know how?
Well, those early songs were like almost magically written. Darkness at the break of noon, shadows even the silver spoon, a handmade blade, a child's balloon. Well, try to sit down and write something like that. There's a magic to that, and it's not Siegfried and Roy kind of magic, you know. It's a different kind of a penetrating magic. And I did it at one time.
You don't think you can do it today?
Mm-mm.
A honest and frightening revelation for creatives, and a not so veiled warning to use it or lose it before it's too late. Dylan went on to say, I can do other things. Dylan is a skilled painter and sculptor with works in famous galleries and on tour. His art features Americana with a focus on transience and journey. His sculptures, particularly ironworks, incorporate a lot of found objects and tools of the past, like gates, screens, and furniture, often with symbolic and elusive details. He has a fascination with trains. I've seen him wielding a welder's torch. At 87, Dylan is still on the road. Catch a live concert and see his art. He's an American treasure. I'm going to ask our esteemed producer and sound editor, Sean, to take us out with a favorite Dylan song, Shelter from the Storm, because Lord knows it, we all need it. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
No twist of the arm necessary, Jonathan. When you hear Dylan's poetic words of seeking refuge, when we mourn, are hurt, or left with nothing, to find warmth and safety, not in a literal shelter, but in someone's love and understanding. Let's remember to always be that shelter for others. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. Also, look for Jonathan's latest short story, The Line in the Lake, already published in the online magazine Mobius. It's been published once again, this time in the June issue of The Anniversary in This Town, published by Scars Publications. Find it at scars.tv or drop an email to razorsinkpodcast@gmail.com.
I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail, hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around and she was standing there,
with silver bracelets on her wrist and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.